Good morning. I'm happy that you are all here to share in this presentation and the discussion that we'll have soon. I want to have several acknowledgments. One is to the PI of this project, Gail Cummings, who is here, who is also the director of our Master's in Public Health program, and also to the collaborators that you will be hearing a lot more about, and in particular to the staff of the community-based health center oral health project that you'll see pictures of them, and particularly to all the parents and children that are the reason we do this work and that actively participated in this study. So I have no relationships to disclose. And we have been hearing in the last few days about the importance of oral health as a priority for the nation. In 2012, healthy people in the middle of 2010 and 2020 made oral health one of the 12 leading health indicators for the nation. And there's several major objectives that I wanted to mention in Healthy People 2020 that relate specifically to this project and were sort of part of the background. And the overall indicator is using oral health services within the last year. The specific objectives is to reduce the proportion of children and adolescents who have dental caries and untreated dental disease, to increase the proportion of low-income children and adolescents who have had preventative oral health care in the last year, and to increase the proportion of school-based health centers with oral health components. So this is sort of part of the focus that this particular project was responding to, these national needs, not only local needs in our area. So we all, I think, are aware of the high prevalence of children with tooth decay, but I was surprised to learn that it's a quarter of children in the United States ages 2 to 5 have tooth decay. And I also want to say that as we talk in the next few minutes, that our public health program is working as a collaborator with community groups in different low-income communities on a series of health problems, and that we actually didn't come to this work with experience in oral health. It was something new to us, and so many people here in the audience certainly have a lot more experience than we do, and I'll explain how we got involved. But social and economic conditions, as we've just heard from our last speakers, significantly impact oral health and access to preventative and restorative oral health services. And children of lower socioeconomic statuses have a higher prevalence of dental caries and are more likely to have untreated caries. We were particularly interested in that school-based health centers have been shown to be effective in bridging the gap with healthcare access related to disparities and are associated with greater likelihood of use of health services, acceptability and satisfaction among families. So we were very interested in those issues focused on school health. And the genesis of this particular project related to long-standing collaboratives, collaborations focused in low-income communities. The specific one was in North Vallejo, which is a working-class community with a lot of poverty. We often refer to Vallejo as a mid-sized city with big city problems and not big city resources. So in this particular area, it's known as a food desert, lots of crime, lots of unemployment, very isolated from the rest of Vallejo. It was originally built to specifically house African-American families in a segregated way during building of the shipyards, and it still has some of that same tone, although now the families aren't specifically African-American, but there still aren't sidewalks to grocery stores and things like that. So this collaboration had existed, and as many of you know about schools and school health, the full-service community school movement is an outgrowth of Healthy Start in California, And so the Full Service Community School Collaborative had several key members, but many other organizational members that I'll mention throughout the talk. So of course the Vallejo City Unified School District, Solano Coalition for Better Health, which is a large coalition focused on access issues, First Five Solano, which has a lot of the Birth to Five, Head Start, and other WIC programs for families with young children, Touro University, California Public Health, which is our program. Touro University is located in Vallejo, California, and has mainly graduate medical education, so we're training students to be health providers and public health leaders. And interestingly, in 2010, there was a pretty large community needs assessment conducted, and the top priority, that there was nothing even close. We were used to, we've been working for violence prevention, depression prevention, healthy eating, active living, but clearly it was oral health. So the families were saying, this is our primary need, this is what we want. And so at that time, we didn't even have any oral health people or dentists on our collaborative. So we had to really shift a lot. And the target population in this North Vallejo area, we expanded to all of Vallejo, but originally is two schools, two elementary schools that include school-based health centers that were developed from this collaborative effort. And the population is low-income, ethnically diverse. Interestingly, almost 50% Hispanic, 48%, with parents mainly being monolingual Spanish-speaking with some understanding of English, but much preferred Spanish is the preferred language. Almost 30% African-American, 19% Asian-American, which is largely Filipino, and 3% white. And a minimum on these two schools, that it was higher in some of the other neighboring schools, of 80% of the students are eligible for free or reduced price meal subsidies, which is a proxy for low income, meeting federal standards of low income. So this collaborative got together, learned all we could, kind of very fast learning curve about oral health, what other programs were happening in California around the country, contacted HRSA and applied, and successfully applied and got a four-year grant to build and implement a school-based comprehensive oral health services project that would integrate oral health with the school-based health centers, provide oral health services and health education to uninsured children or underinsured children 0 to 18, so we expanded from those particular schools, and develop plans for sustainability beyond the, we were already thinking from day one, this is only 4 years. And so this particular study, Touro was asked to take the lead on assessment, evaluation, feeding back information to the collaborative. So this particular study that I'm presenting right now is a qualitative study where we interviewed in three waves key informants, including collaborative members, the staff that was hired, and families. And the major interest was looking at what people's perspectives were for needs and gaps in oral health services, what barriers and challenges were, not only for access to services, which are quality services, so those two issues not necessarily the same, but also for oral healthy behaviors, for what people were feeling were their challenges. And then we wanted to look at what were factors that seemed to be contributing to successes, to meeting objectives and people's felt needs, and what were some of the collaborative issues around sustainability. So it was a qualitative study that I'm reporting on right now. We did key informant interviews and focus groups, and it was conducted in waves, year one, three, and four. Year one, before we started delivering services to really get sort of baseline information from people's perspective, challenges and barriers. Year three, when we certainly hoped to and were fully operating, and year four, the very end of the project, to be able to reflect back and forward. Interviewers were project collaborators and oral health service providers. We had about 12 people, and the people weren't exactly the same every year because there were some changes in staff in some of the organizations, and parents also receiving services. And some of the people that were selected to be interviewed were identified by the project team who had the most experience in oral health. And they included, for example, the medical director and nurse practitioner and staff of the school-based health center, included community dentists, and people in all the community organizations that were major collaborators. And the focus groups with the parents were conducted in Spanish, and we had approval from the Turo IRB. And all the interviews and focus groups, some of the interviews were mostly conducted in person, but a few were conducted on the phone, and a few of the interviews were small groups, and everything was recorded and transcribed, and standard qualitative methods were used to analyze the data, including finding major themes and comparisons, and the analysis was done primarily by two researchers to provide some verification of categories, and it was shared with the key project team who could also feedback things related to interpretation. So the results that I want to talk about are in these basic areas that were defined originally, looking at how people thought of needs and barriers, both again not just for access to services, which was major in quality services, but also for oral health, using oral health behaviors at the family level, contributing to successes, challenges, collaborations, and recommendations. So the barriers from families' perspectives and from the provider's perspective looked mostly at attitudinal and knowledge barriers and also instrumental barriers. So some of the attitudinal barriers that were frequently mentioned were the low education and awareness levels of parents and actual misinformation that parents had. And some of the examples that were commonly given was the lack of importance of baby teeth, something that people felt like it didn't really matter. You lost your teeth anyway, so didn't really understand any kind of health importance of baby teeth. And a lack of understanding of the association between oral health and overall health. Lack of understanding and skills related to proper brushing and flossing technique, and lack of understanding of the importance of discontinuing bottle feeding by age one and limited knowledge of available care. What I do want to talk about in a few minutes is there were marked changes from baseline to our last wave of interviews in all those attitudinal areas. So a lot of people thought that these are just sort of fixed attitudes. These attitudes belong to Latino poor families, but we found out that those attitudes were completely changeable based on people's experience, positive experiences with oral health care. And the other thing that I mentioned, or that I wanted to mention, is the attitude of oral health not being a priority among families and low motivation to seek oral health care, and children's fear related to receiving oral health care. So these attitudinal barriers were actually similarly described by parents and by providers, but the cause of the attitude was often described differently. So for example, the child's fear, providers said the fear was there, that children have fear because the kids don't get routine visits and they don't start early enough. And the parents would say it was really because of how they were treated, lack of sort of child-friendly, respectful treatment. So, and parents also talked about how they had lacked experience in oral health care, that almost all parents said they never had any oral health care at all growing up, and only a few did, so they had no experience ever going to the dentist, and that language was a significant barrier, and that the attitudes of providers and office staff were a significant barrier. They felt often treated with disrespect and they wouldn't return. So, and that they weren't getting enough reminders. And then with instrumental barriers, there was limited accessibility to oral health because of the cost, low cost they needed or wanted free oral health care clinics, limited hours, convenience of the location, and accessibility via transportation. I already mentioned language and some cultural barriers around attitudes, and legal barriers rely on immigrant status and a lot of insurance and paperwork barriers. So some of the providers talked about the difficulty of actually providing high quality, low cost oral health care. We've heard that many, many dentists do not accept insurance, Medi-Cal or Medicaid, and that many dentists, the dentists on our team reported that many of their colleagues do not want to provide low cost care. They either say they're not interested or not able. That reimbursements in California, Medicare and Medi-Cal aren't adequate, and that some of the oral health services didn't have a full range of dental services. And so successes, what were factors towards success in this project that were listed in large part were the wide range of partners and collaborators, which included SCIP, which is the insurance program, and a SCIP worker was there one day a week, spoke Spanish, and was able to help people fill out forms, very complex forms that people really can't fill out and were a major barrier in terms of application for Medicare and other insurances. The referrals to local dentists in the first 4 years of our program, the program provided mainly prophylactic care and had to refer outside to dentists, but the referrals were with the dentists who were actually part of the collaborative. And largely the convenient location of the oral health clinic with school-based health center, that this was considered a major reason for success, that families felt they trusted the school, they knew the people that worked in the health center, they could just walk in, there were all kinds of activities for children, and so many people don't have cars or don't drive or don't have driver's license, so, and don't feel comfortable on buses, so that just the convenience and the acceptability was a big reason for success. And then these are some of the actual, when people said, what was our success? They said, well, actually, delivering care. So there was prevention education delivered in the last year of the grant. These mostly reflect the last year of the grant of over 1,300 children in six schools, and Turo students, master's level students, helped deliver this care. You can see some details here about clinic patients and visits and prophylaxis. So a lot of care was delivered. And the perspective of the parents, they really emphasize the quality of staff interactions, being treated with respect, all services were delivered in their family language. And they also really talked in detail about the explanation in teaching and modeling and correction of proper brushing and flossing technique. And they also, they'd never really gotten that level of detail in any other dental visit, where there was just a lot of practice in actually how to brush teeth, and kids were very excited about it, the fact that services were free and children weren't afraid, and they said that it changed the oral health behaviors in the whole family, and so people completely changed their attitudes from the beginning about saying that oral health was the gateway to health. People actually use that phrase, and that they wouldn't miss appointments, and they really thought it was important. They were extremely enthusiastic, grateful, and excited about it. And again, some challenges, the last few things I wanted to mention, is that they had a lot of problems with their project data system and had to enter a lot of things by hand. There was difficulty in communication between many of the partners who have different institutional backgrounds, from universities to school districts to health providers to families, and maintaining the collaboration over time was difficult. And these are the people that are the deliverers, and the the role in terms of sustainability is a really exciting story. Community collaborative that has a full dental clinic that is FQHC decided to come in and partner, and they have a dental director which will allow sustainability. And the last recommendations is just it's important that parents are active partners, that schools incorporate oral health education as part of their regular curriculum, which is happening now, and that the community increases commitment to improving access and education. And in summary, that reducing barriers to accessibility at all levels of family, school, and community is a responsibility that we all have. Services must be culturally competent for families, and the school setting appears to be an ideal location for services, and partnerships need to include a broad range of collaborators over time. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. All three presentations shed a lot of light on what your programs are doing, and especially for the first two with how vision care and oral health connect too. In your program, is there a vision component at all?
No, so this is so exciting. Yeah. I can't wait to get back and talk about it. So you will make a contribution to our efforts.
And I had one question for your program. When the people are learning to brush and floss better, is the topic of fluoridated toothpaste getting built into there too?
Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you. And drinking fluoridated water. Those communities
are
fluoridated.
Yeah, and there's whole efforts around changing behaviors in school in terms of water and not drinking soda and having raw vegetables and fruit. So there's a bigger effort.
Great. Thank you. Are there questions from the audience? Dr. Tomar.
Scott Tomar, University of Florida College of Dentistry. A question for my colleagues in vision care. It's a policy question. So in our state, and probably in most states, vision screening is mandated for various grades in public schools. Dentistry, in general, oral health screening is not. I mean, there are some states, but most do not. So I guess the question is, have you found those policies, those screenings, to be effective from a public health perspective, identifying children at relatively young age with vision impairment? And if so, are there suggestions you would have for oral health and whether or not we should pursue policy changes to do that on the oral health side?
Would you like to come up to the mic?
You said what?
I was asking if he was planted in the audience. Vision screenings, this is an ongoing debate in our professional community, of course. I have to disclose that I've been part of a national panel. My colleague here, Dr. Block, is a significant part of that, presented yesterday on the data structure and measurement of trying to provide a structure. There is no universally accepted vision screening that's valid and evidence-based, but this group had pulled together from our vision and preschooler studies. We do have some evidence that has pointed to some methods, some methodology within different groups, whether different types of screeners that are appropriate for this age group, this preschool age group that we're talking about. Right now, that's as far as it goes. So yes, every state is different. We have a few states where it is mandated. In Illinois, it's still only if they fail a screening or it's mandated prior to school, your vision exam. So, and I believe you're one of four states right now in the country, so that a comprehensive eye exam, including dilation, I hope, a comprehensive eye exam is required only in four states. And the problem that we have is that because we don't have a universally accepted and evidence-based screening program across the ages, and we know that kids get missed. And I can tell you anecdotally, I work very closely with our health department, and in Kent County we've been doing it for over 60 years. They do a great job. It's never been validated, and only a third of those that they refer, and they're good referrals, but only a third of the kids that I see that need treatment were referred from the health department. And they all have to be screened in my state every other year. And it's not because they do a bad job. It's a screening. So that's part of our issue in our vision community. Do you want
to?
And I can't answer the second part as far as advice for dental policy, because I'm not familiar with where you are between screenings and full exams.
I appreciate the question, and I'm probably not going to answer the question directly. I think our two groups have a whole lot in common and really haven't thought about it. So the first thing I just want to say, since I've got the mic here, is how much I really appreciate Kathy and her leadership in this. I was working on this paper that I just presented to you, and so I just called her up and I just said, well, you know, I've got some data. And she was so welcoming, you know. And you do that and you don't know somebody's going to sign the phone down and say, we figured it out and we don't want to talk to somebody else. So it was very welcoming. As a result of that, we did our webinar together. You know, we had 100, there were 94, 96 people on that. There were, you know, the lines only accommodated 100 people. So we're really kind of on to something. So I really just hope that we could kind of nurture this collaboration. And since this is a collaborative session, so you can just see how this kind of evolved. And so I think we've kind of stumbled upon this co-interest. And I think just how we approach, I mean, you could just take either of these discussions and plug in vision care or oral health care. It's the same. It's precisely the same issue. So, and we're now talking about the same population. So, I just want to say that as a frame. I really appreciate how welcoming you folks have been in this. Now, in response to the question, I think for us, children's issues and adult issues are really very different animals, and they tend to be bifurcated in terms of how we approach that. And I'm really not a kids person, but there are resources like, you know, Sandy, you know, here. And so I would just really urge you to begin that dialogue. Adult issues are really different. And so in vision, there's probably a window from about age 20 to 40 where vision's already pretty stable. But then, you know, for all of us, about age 40, we start getting... we're living examples, you know, bifocals, trifocals, and then potential for eye disease. And so it needs to be addressed then. And so at the adult level, we don't have any more idea than a goose what we're talking about when you talk about screening. We really don't. And there are opportunities like the Welcome to Medicare visit, which does not address vision. It's not part of the protocol. We tried to establish that, and for some reason it was not replicated, even though in Great Britain we were modeling, you know, their Welcome to Medicare. And so a lot of people who are at age 65 and they, you know, they get their Medicare card and they go and see their physician and get that thing. Nobody talks about vision unless you just got a physician. They're not mandated to. So we really need to think about this as a lifespan issue. So where are the opportunities among children, and how can we improve the science and the screening? And I think great strides are being made in that area. At the adult level, we all say screening. I don't know about in oral health, but we talk about vision screening. Everybody knows it, nods their head, yeah. And then we say, okay, well, what are the criteria? We say, oh, we don't know. And then we start arguing among ourselves. And so there needs to be more clarity, because screenings, you can't hold up. I don't know your business, but you can't hold up a Snellen chart and ask somebody to look at it and then make any kind of inference about that person's eye health or the trajectory of the eye health. And so we need to become much more sophisticated. The science is, the technology is in our favor to do so. So it's a really fluid and interesting thing. So one of the things I want to compliment oral health, you guys did your report a few years ago, the Surgeon General's report, or was it informed that?
15 years ago.
It's so, well, there's more recent. Anyway, I mean, you're really engaging these disparities at this national level. And we've got some evidence to inform that, but I don't think we've we've integrated that knowledge into a kind of an actionable report yet. So we have things to learn from you. So thank you very much. Thanks for giving me the time to chat.
I just wanted to say real quick, I think part of this is there's a need, and we're illustrating that right now. There's a need for us to become more health literate between our professions. And I'm really happy that we are present in this session, but I think going forward, that's a big part of this. There's so much that I don't know about oral health, and I work with people in the oral field every single day, and I just don't know enough. And so that we can have these conversations and facilitate it.
Well, it's a true opportunity to learn from each other and learn with each other.